And even though Zoom records in mono, which is okay, you know, for talk. Anyway, welcome to the poetry show. We're gonna start in about 4 minutes early here this morning on Enlightened Radio. The poetry show is broadcasting now weekly live at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays. And maybe it's a good opportunity to just make for those listening. And I notice we have about 30 listening, which is okay, fine, early in the morning. All right. And so www.enlightenradio.org is where you find us. And usually, right at the top of the page, there's a player. That's not always true when you look at the site on your phone. It's sometimes hidden, and you have to hit the right button to see it. Occasionally, it depends on the phone or the tablets. It shows up good, but for some reason, on some of the phones, my phone, for example, I have to go to player.enlightenradio.org, which is, in which case, even on my phone, the player shows up nice. So the player is a product of podbean.com, and you can listen to our podcasts on podcasts, that's plural, podcasts, dot enlightened radio, all one word, dot org. And you can also listen to them on the Podbean site, which is called democracyroad.podbean.com. Usually when I post them on podcast.enlightenradio.org, I put a little more information in about if I can put it together about the program too. So anyway, we're broadcasting our live shows on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings, 10 a.m. right now. So, you know, Monday is the poetry show. No, excuse me, the storytelling show. Tuesday with Fanny Crawford and Stasz Lukowski. And Tuesday is our Labor Beat program. And Wednesday is the poetry show. Thursday was Recovery Radio, but by our host, James Boy, wants to do it in the evening now because he's working day shift. At 72, he's working deputy day shift. Finally, out of the night shift. Anyway, and on Friday, Karen Valentine and I, and sometimes Larry Bish and others also are at 10 a.m. So enough of that, and welcome to the poetry show and my good friend and host, Janet Harrison, who made it in this morning despite her numerous daily obstacles, you know, that she has to overturn. to think about Peter Rabbit trying to get out of get out to the Mr. What's his name's garden there.
Greta.
Anyway, so we're here, and he's not chasing us out of the garden right away. So anyway, Janet, help us with some. I was reading the poems you sent me last night and this morning, and I love W.S. Merwin, and you know, it's just like I'd rather listening to really good jazz music, you know. Anyway, take us away.
Okay, we're going to, today we're going to honor three poets who lived long lives, lived into their 90s. Stanley Kunitz lived to be 100 and was writing poetry still at 100. So I picked three poets with to honor. It's Stanley Kunitz, W.S. Merwin, and Ruth Stone. And I picked a poem from each. And the first poem from Stanley Kunitz is called The Layers. And it may be one of my favorite poems he's ever written. I'm reading it off the Poetry Foundation website. The Layers. I have walked through many lives, some of them my own, and I am not who I was, though some principle of being abides from which I struggle not to stray. When I look behind, as I am compelled to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling toward the horizon and the slow fires trailing from abandoned campsites, over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings. Oh, I have made myself a tribe out of my true infections, and my tribe is scattered. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? In a rising wind, the manic dust of my friends, those who fell along the way, bitterly stings my face. Yet I turn, exulting somewhat, with my will intact to go wherever I need to go, and every stone on the road precious to me. In my darkest night, when the moon was covered and I roamed through wreckage, a nimbus-clouded voice directed me, "Live in the layers, not in the litter." Though I lack the art to decipher it, no doubt the next chapter in my book of transformations is already written. I am not done with my changes.
Wow. That's got, it's almost perfect, isn't it?
Yes, it's an amazing poem. And the opening, I've walked through many lives, some of them my own. You're just caught immediately. I mean, he's just hooked to it immediately.
Right. It's like the movie Oppenheimer. Once you start watching it, you can't look away. I found out when I read that poem last night, and I think I have read it before because I felt like I'd heard it when I was reading it, you know. But the I actually like the part where he says, "When I look behind, as I am called to look before I can gather strength to proceed on my journey, I see the milestones dwindling toward the horizon, the slow fires trailing from abandoned campsites, over which scavenger angels wheel on heavy wings." When I hear the phrase scavenger angels, John, wheel on heavy wings, I think of those Vietnam War movies with the helicopters, maybe I don't know what he was thinking.
I actually stole that for one of my poems and have a scavenger angel in one of my poems.
Well, then maybe you know what they are. Okay, so
mine were not helicopters.
No, not helicopters. I just
but it's there.
We have the Homeland Security or whoever, emergency services flying over our homes here on Bolivar on a pretty periodic basis, right? I mean, and I know some people think it's, they have terrible fears of, what it represents or what it, to them anyway. But I thought scavenger angels is a very, an unusual expression, but I'm not sure it entirely fits in the poem. But then I didn't write the poem, so I would hope now I don't know what really fits.
I think it's, I really liked it. I think it made there.
I think it belongs there. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool.
And somebody talked about the manic dust of my friends. One of the word manic shows up, I think, partly because one of his close friends was Theodore Ruthke. And Ruthke was bipolar. And they were very, very good
friends. Interesting. Okay, yeah. That makes some sense. How shall the heart be reconciled to its feast of losses? Now, boy, I can relate to that.
Is there ever a question that one has to answer? It's that one.
Right. I mean, it's, and especially, did he write this poem late or early in his life?
I think it's kind of mid-career because I was looking at the date. It feels like it's a late poem, but it appeared in a book that was copyrighted 78.
But he was, already pretty, he's probably past. He might have been past retirement in 78. I don't know.
He was named poet laureate when he was 95.
Right.
So he was
So,
had an amazing career.
yeah, I mean, it's let me just check what his birth and so 1905. So in 78, yeah, he would have been 73 years old. So because I'm 75, and I can the Feast of Losses, I can name them, I really can. And I hear about another nearly every week, so I imagined him writing this at 95, and the piece gets larger and larger. So anyway, yeah, I love that poem, Janet. That was that. I'm glad you picked that one.
And he said about his poetry, if I hadn't had an urgent impulse, if the poem didn't seem to me terribly important, I'd never wanted to write it and didn't. That's what persisted. So he did have his output was not huge because he only wrote the poems that felt urgent to him, which I think is an interesting take because other poets do things differently.
Right. I mean, there's a poem a day kind of a
Yeah,
style to
William Stafford was
everybody.
wrote a poem every day. He was a proponent of that.
And well, Billy Collins too. I think he does that. He talks about that too. Getting up every morning and doing it. But I it's probably a good principle. It gets you in the mindset and it keeps you there. But on the other hand, some people need to live their regular lives, right? To find the food that becomes the feast of a poem. There you go. Turning the beast on its head there. But anyway, what a beautiful poem.
I love the advice to live in the layers, not the litter.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one. I haven't quite I'm gonna keep thinking about that. That's a living layers, not the litter.
I'm not quite sure what the layers mean, but I can imagine what the litter is. And if you get stuck in the debris of your life, you never advance.
That's true. I remember on our back porch when Carol and I were both smoking cigarettes that we had a giant ashtray back there, and we referred to it as our mutual detritus. I guess it's a form of terrible litter. Anyway, so but yeah, I don't know. The litter, the layers. Yeah, I have to think. I'm going to keep thinking about that one, but very provocative. Yeah, all kinds of parts of that poem are provoke, and you go from line to line, and you're surprised on almost every one. He keeps you going all the way through. You don't have to reread it to at least be inspired. Yeah, and you want to reread it because, oh wow, how to take a closer look, and the closer you look, the better it gets. I mean, it's even so anyway, let's move on to what do you who do you want to do next?
The Merwin poem. I have an order for this.
You have an
And
order?
this is called The Wings of Daylight, and this is a late poem. This was written late in his career. His dates are 27 to 2019. And it's called The Wings of Daylight. Brightness appears, showing us everything. It reveals the splendors it calls everything, but shows it to each of us alone, and only once, and only to look at, not to touch or hold in our shadows. What we see is never what we touch. What we take turns out to be something else. What we see that one time departs untouched, while other shadows gather around us. The world's shadows mingle with our own. We had forgotten them, but they know us. They remember us as we always were. They were at home here before the first came. Everything will leave us except the shadows. But the shadows carry the whole story. At first daybreak, they open their long wings.
Oh, boy.
And this poem seems almost mystic to me.
Well, a lot of his poetry seems that way to me.
And it's written without any punctuation, so you have, but he does it so well. You can, it's not hard to read. Sometimes when poets write without punctuation,
can I try to read that one again?
Sure, please do.
Just because I think that one's a little harder to follow than the Stanley Kunitz poem. Brightness appears, showing us everything. It reveals the splendors, it calls everything, but shows it to each of us alone, and only once, and only to look at, not to touch or hold in our shadows. What we see is never what we touch. What we take turns out to be something else. What we see that one time departs untouched. While other shadows gather around us, the world's shadows mingle with our own. We had forgotten them, but they know us. They remember us as we always were. They were at home here before the first came. Everything will leave us except the shadows. But the shadows carry the whole story. At first daybreak, they open their long wings. Wow. Glad I did that. You know, it's I'm hearing it better.
Yes.
Interesting.
I love the close of that poem, you know, but the shadows carry the whole story. At first daybreak, they open their long wings.
I know. It's just truly inspired. You know, I think he has it's tempting to sort of evoke a mysticism out of his stuff. But, you know, I noticed that I remember I read a lot of him back when you first introduced him on the poetry show early years ago. And I noticed that you were tempted to head into a mystical kind of brainwork, or turn on Van Morrison or something. I don't know, but actually he very rarely, you know, goes there himself. He lets you go there, but he doesn't, he stays pretty tactile. Does that make any sense to you? I mean,
he sort of like points the direction you can go in, but he doesn't go there.
Right.
What you're trying to say.
The wings of daylight. So that was,
I guess you think of daylight, you know, coming as with light, but he's talking about shadows having long wings at daybreak. I thought that was a very paradoxical but very beautiful image.
Yeah. No, I love the way it's like a conversation. You would think it could be a dialogue almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brightness appears, showing us everything. It reveals the splendors. It calls everything. Like, for example, each of the individual lines in this poem could be a sentence, almost a separate sentence, right? Or sometimes the couplet, mm-hmm. is simple sentence, but the fact that you can read it differently, you can see how you can merge the sentences or change the meaning by ignoring the linear, you know, kind of aspect, line by line by line, and it has other kinds of resonance to it. Um, uh, Anyway, I thought it was just structured beautifully, as well as being, you know, retaining his reputation for very musical lyrics, you know, very musical. The words work very comfortably in your mind. I could go on, but I really like him. W.S. Merwin, 1927 to 2019. You're right. Didn't he live in Hawaii?
He lived in Hawaii. Lived in Hawaii with his wife.
All right. Well, that's another powerful one, Janet. So what's the third poem? Ruth Stone, you're talking about?
Yeah, Ruth Stone, and it's a surprise. It is the most surprising of the poems, I think, even though they were all, and this was published in Poetry Magazine in the 50s. And it's called Experience, which is, you know, when you read the poem, you'll come back to the title and go, oh, this is called Experience. But listen to the first line. Satan, I came across the iris bed to where you sauntered by the eucalyptus tree. Alanthus, tree of heaven, bordered the wall. Blue as the iris were the eyes you turned to me. Ah, were the heavens so tender as the arch of shade below the glittering blue? The warm winds fade, the snow lies deep and indestructible. Earth cuts back and bends the graver's spade. Creature of light and pleasure, there in the branches overhead, I heard you singing. Blue were the wings you spread, blue is the air, and I came wrapped in my living shroud to hear you sing of caves of snow, where diamond suns light up the diamond whiteness of the dead.
Ooh.
So here is a poem addressed to Satan, who, of course, is a fallen angel. We can't forget that.
A scavenger angel. Yes. Okay. Possibly.
Satan, I came across the iris bed to where you sauntered by the eucalyptus tree. I mean, what an opening.
Yeah. I came across the iris bed to where you sauntered. Now, I hadn't read this one before.
No, I hadn't either. I stumbled upon it when I was looking.
That second verse. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I was curious about when she wrote it, so I looked it up, and it actually is written before the suicide of her husband, which marked her life for the rest of, she wrote about that for the rest of her life. So the dead here are more abstract than...
Then they became.
And they became later.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, were the heavens so tender as the arch of shade below the glittering blue? The warm winds fade, the snow lies deep and indestructible. The earth cuts back and bends the graver's spade. Now that's an interesting line. But I'm not connecting to it quite as much as the other two poems. It's interesting. Creatures of light, a creature of light and pleasure. There is in the branches overhead. I heard you singing.
And then she says, I came wrapped in my living shroud. The cat is trying to close my window to hear you sing of the caves of snow where diamond suns light up the diamond whiteness of the dead. That repeat of diamond, which is something that, you know, you have to be very careful to, you know, when you're doing that, because it's such a strong word, you repeat it so quickly, really gives you an emphasis.
Yeah,
the diamond suns and the diamond whiteness
of the dead, which is, yeah. That's very unusual. And do you know anything more about, so Ruth Stone was
Well, her husband committed suicide. She had, I think, three children that she raised by herself. She lived on a farm, I think, up in Vermont, somewhere in New England. It could be Vermont, it could
Vermont,
be
yes.
somewhere
No,
else.
it says Vermont, yes.
She
So she won an
was
award
not
with her first.
famous when she was younger. Her fame came late in life. She was championed by some poets, but she had a breakthrough book, I think, back, when she was in her 70s, maybe.
Ordinary Words was published in 1999 as her first she got
It wasn't your
recognition
first.
relatively late with the publication of Ordinary Words, 1999. The
Yes.
book won the National Book Critics Circle Award and was followed by other award-winning collections, including In the Next Galaxy, 2002, winner of the National Book Award, In the Dark, 2004, and What Love Comes to, New and Selected Poems in 2008, a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Anyway, yeah. Yeah,
Anyhow, I
well,
just thought it's
that's very
fascinating that
compact.
she, her portrait of Satan as cute creature of light and pleasure with blue eyes. I mean, I just don't think of the Satan as having blue eyes.
Oh, of course. You know, you think of him as looking like Jack Nicholson, right?
Yeah.
Yes. But that's, I'm not sure anybody ever played the devil better than Jack, but yeah, so blue-eyed, but I don't think that would be there's so many in all the Faust legends and stuff like that, you could easily get a blue-eyed
Yes, this is a
devil.
different kind of Satan than I would have expected.
Right.
A different kind of encounter. And when she calls it experience, it really gives you a little bit of chills.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how is Satan, whether it's Satan as a concept or as a bad person, an evil person, or a metaphor for an evil person. I mean, I met somebody and they were satanic. I mean, they did something wrong. I mean, whatever. But outside of a moral code, and as indifferent to your affections as death itself, So, but maybe not. Some Satans are quite active in attempting to seduce you, right? And that's how that often portrayed. Not as indifferent. No, they're trying to get you, get you downstairs with them.
This
That's
is
the
more like a temptation. A temptation is these caves of snow where the dead are,
right.
which make it sound almost alluring. So it's an interesting poem, I thought.
Well, the
And I
diamond
thought it,
whiteness of the dead. Yes, the diamond whiteness of the dead.
yes. I thought with I thought it was interesting how all three poems use wings, but they're inflected totally different. In the Kunitz poem, it's the scavenger angels with heavy wings.
Right.
In the Merwin poem, the shadows spread their long wings at morning. And here, the devil has blue wings. I heard you singing, blue were the wings you spread, blue is the air.
Yeah, it's a very,
Because
it's different. It's interesting. Yeah, right.
I thought it was just an interesting poem.
Oh, I thought, and very compact. I mean, one of
Yes.
those poems that you could write a pretty lengthy essay about, and still be shortchanging it. And which is what you'd like the poems to do, to send you on a trip. Bring you back, hopefully, too. Anyway, well, I think those are three beautiful poems, Janet. By the way, I was going to suggest that I got to get the contact info from, it looks like Tom Donlan, but Jesse
I gave it
Stone.
to you. I sent it to you yesterday.
Oh, did you? Okay, I'll get it then. Okay, but then I'm going to try to get him on for next week if he's available and wants to appear. I understand that he does. Okay. So
yes.
And I've been reading his book. I've read about six poems in it. You know, they're pretty good.
Yes.
And they're interesting, you know. So are you cool with that? Does that sound
that's fine. Like I'm going to have to
leave
early.
Do you need
a
copy of the book? Do you need a copy of the book?
I have a copy. Book? I bought a copy and I asked him to send you a copy.
Okay, and he did. Okay, good. Okay, all right. Fair enough. All right, well, that'd be great. Okay, okay. Anyway, Carol's taking off from Vermont on Saturday. She's going to be gone for 2 weeks, but I'll be here next Wednesday. So, I think we can plan on a show.
Okay, I'm going to have to leave early because I have an 11 o'clock appointment in Martinsburg, but I'll be here for the beginning of the show.
All right. Okay. Well, I think we're good for today. Thank you so much for, you know, three beautiful poems and three magnificent poems.
Write your own poem about wings, however you want to use them. Angel wings, bird wings, wings that you have, wings that you dream about.
Right. Get your pen out or your... What are you typing on or whatever? And take to wings. Take to wing. All right. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Poetry Show. And we'll be back next week. And this podcast should be up by tomorrow, no latest. I got a lot of stuff I got to do this afternoon, so it might not get up until tomorrow. But anyway, we hope to see you soon at www.enlightenradio.org. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next. I have to quote Naomi Shihab Nye all the time. I asked her about it, by the way, one time. It was okay if I used her line from her poem. And she said, go for it.
She's a sweetheart.
Right.
I really like Naomi.
Take care.
Bye-bye.